Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow.
Hello and welcome to Right Now Radio. You're on 3CR 855 AM and tonight we're having a special edition in light of the centenary of International Women's Day. 100 years ago, International Women's Day was first honoured in parts of Europe where women flooded the streets to demand the rights to work, vote, be trained, hold public office and to fight for an end to gender-based discrimination. Today, on a few days shy of the centenary of that very momentous day, we're going to be speaking with a couple of fabulous guests and reflecting on the women's rights movement and its evolution over time. We're going to be having a chat with lawyer and feminist trailblazer Ariel Couchman and Feminist Futures co-convener Alexia Staker. About some of their personal reflections on feminism and women's rights. But before we jump into all of that, we're going to have a bit of a chat with Ben about the latest human rights news and events.
Hi, Laura. How are you today?
I'm good.
Happy International Women's Day week to you and everyone. I'm so excited. We've got a trailblazer on our show today.
I know. She is a trailblazer. I don't know if she'll get a bit embarrassed when I say that, but personally I'm in awe and I think she's a trailblazer.
Indeed. Exciting. Well, let's get into some news very quickly. We're going to, obviously, given the theme, have a little bit of an International Women's Day and women's rights themed news. So people who've been picking up the newspapers or listening on the radio will have noticed all of this great discussion that's happening around this issue of quotas for women on board. So I think some of the statistics are pretty dire when you look at about 11% of women in terms of ASX countries on boards. And I think it's, I can't remember what CEOs or chairpersons, but there's only 4 women in the top ASX companies as well. So these statistics aren't great, and very happily it's now leading to this discussion that we have to have around whether or not perhaps more stringent quotas need to be put in place or other measures to advance the representation. So obviously from a human rights perspective and an equality and non-discrimination point of view, it's interesting to think about it in this context and this idea of positive steps that states have to take in order to ensure substantive equality for, in this case, women. So something like quotas when statistics are so low are perhaps one of the ways that states can look at how they fulfil this positive obligation. And it gets even worse when you go into looking at, you know, part-time work, for example. I think women are paid roughly about 84% in the male dollar, 84% compared with men. But when you go into part-time work, it's about 64%, or you go into specific industries such as finance, it's around, I think, 66% or 68% or something like that. And even issues like superannuation, where women, because they're in and out of the workforce and things like that, they get about half of the amount of superannuation that men have. So all interesting issues, and it's good to see that it's being discussed. And it's turning into this nice political issue. You've got people in the Liberal Party like Kelly O'Dwyer and Tony Abbott who are coming out and saying that they don't support enforced quotas. I think their line is that, you know, position and appointment should be based on merit. So maybe Kelly O'Dwyer is saying something about the merit that women have, and that they only 11% of women have the merit to be on boards. I don't know whether she'd support that and has thought it through fully. But happily then people like Joe Hockey coming out and saying that he supports it, quotas, and our Governor-General, Quentin Bryce, so good on her. So one or two other things that have come up in the news, talk about the baby boomer wave is now causing this new housing crisis. So I think it's this year that the baby boomers hit 65, and a lot of the sort of housing services and authorities are finding that there's now a lot of older people and predominantly women who are finding themselves homeless, and they tend to be women who, I guess, have been involved in maybe housing and housewives and things like that in and out of work throughout their careers, and now they've got very little or no superannuation and are finding themselves in, you know, at risk of homelessness. So it's interesting to see how a lot of these non-discrimination issues manifest themselves in lots of other ways within our community. And very finally, maybe just on a tokenistic non-women's rights matter, we might just mention very quickly that in the Tyler Cassidy inquest, it's a matter that we've talked about quite a few times here on Right Now Radio throughout the last year or so. Final submissions are due this week by all parties, and it's interesting. I think the police are now coming out, and the submissions that they're making is that they're asking the coroner to find a what they call a suicide by cop finding, which apparently is not an uncommon situation where people, particularly when they find themselves in states, look to be shot by police as a way of committing suicide. So that'll be an interesting situation for the coroner to have to face in terms of looking at her findings down the track. So that wraps up some of the news for a week. I think now we're going to hear a little word from some of our sponsors.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view. The people who work in the prison system would have another. And I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio, 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
In Victoria, racial and religious vilification is against the law. That means that people can't write or say things about a person's race or religion that could incite hatred of others. Vilification can include making a racist speech at a public meeting or making hateful comments about a religion in a publication. However, racist jokes or offensive comments are not usually considered vilification. If you have experienced racial or religious vilification, you can make a complaint by calling 03 9281 7100. That's 03 9281 7100. For more information, go to www.humanrightscommission.vic.gov.au.
Authorised by the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission and the Victorian Multicultural Commission, Melbourne.
Welcome back to Right Now Radio. You're on 3CR 855 AM, and today we're having a special Centenary of International Women's Day episode. We're joined in the studio by Alexia Staker, who is a co-convener of Melbourne Feminist Futures Conference, which is shortly to take place in May this year and aims to reinvigorate and unite the contemporary feminist movement. Thanks for coming in, Alexia.
Thank you, Laura.
And we also have with us on the phone Ariel Couchman, who is a trailblazing lawyer, activist and longtime feminist. From a background of some renegade feminist activism as a student to a successful legal career, including senior roles in many progressive organisations, including Central Australian Aboriginal Legal Aid Service and the Domestic Violence Incest Resource Centre. Ariel is currently the director of Youth Law Community Legal Centre and a newly part-time family law mediator. And she's also known to many feminist lawyers as the first woman in Australia to be admitted to the profession wearing pants. Are you there with us, Ariel?
I am.
Thank you so much for coming on board.
Surely the first question is, what are you wearing, pants or a skirt?
Sorry, what was that?
I was just saying the question, are you wearing pants now still?
Look, I am, yeah. I'm getting very comfortable, yeah.
I like it. All these years later, she stays strong. Ariel, we wanted to have a bit of a chat today. It's 100 years since International Women's Day was first celebrated. And we wanted to, I guess, have some personal reflections from you on your thoughts about feminism and also your own history and experience. So at risk of sounding like a ridiculous armchair psychologist, I'm going to start by asking you about your childhood. Ariel, when you were a young girl, What did you want to be when you grew up? Did you perceive any limits to what you could do because of your gender, or have any formative experiences that made you realise that there was gender equality and it was something that you wanted to fight?
Not really. I mean, I think, in fact, I was very lucky to be brought up by a mother who came from a long line of very strong women, and she, you know, if anything, she sort of counselled me against doing kind of the girly thing and sort of said, don't worry about the babies, don't worry about getting married, just have a career, and was always expectant that I would go to university. And And, you know, I seem to remember when I was little I got things like, you know, a milk truck, I think, when I was about sort of six, you know, as a present, as well as the, you know, the dark Tahitian dolly. And and then I also got a football jumper when I was a bit older. So, you know, I think I actually was brought up in a very, you know, nurturing environment, you know, suggesting that I could do anything, and I think I probably thought I could.
Mm, that's fantastic. And then you went on to university, and I guess maybe that's where a lot of your activism began. I understand that you were involved in a group called WAR, Women Against Rape, which organised some pretty revolutionary name and shame operations around rape and sexual violence against women. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, look, I got involved in Women Against Rape, you know, through a friend. It was actually a boyfriend who I got rid of, and then I became best friends to his sister. And so she then took me down to the Women's Liberation Building in, it was then in Moore Street, Fitzroy. It was called the Cultural Palace. And I was taken down there, and it was all a bit scary. You know, there was these really kind of strong, dogmatic, separatist feminists sort of running the show. But, yeah, I got involved in Women Against Rape. I had had an experience of being abused myself when I was about 19, when I was travelling overseas. And so it did sort of strike a chord for me, and so it did for this friend. And so essentially the group was often formed of women who had had sort of rape experiences. And at that time it was incredibly sort of uncommon to really, you know, people just didn't really talk about rape. I mean, generally the view was, oh, yeah, it's a terrible thing and they abhorred it and everything, but there wasn't a recognition that rape was actually committed by some, you know, by a lot of men, largely, very ordinary men at that. And mm-hmm. So we started to get calls from women. We ran a sort of phone line, and so we got calls from women talking about being raped and how they hadn't said anything or done anything because they didn't think anyone would believe them. And so, yes, there was a little bit of direct action we did where we did a bit of graffitiing. And I remember we went out to... I grew up in Ferntree Gully, and we did a bit of graffitiing out in Ferntree Gully, and we went and saw my mother, who's since passed away. But she was... actually, she said, good on you. Because, you know, I think in those days, for a lot of women, the idea of going to the police about rape was not an easy thing, or something that they thought would have particularly good outcomes. So, you know, often I think the idea of some other form of comeback was appealing and necessary, I think.
And some sense of, I guess, solidarity with other people and support through that too.
Yeah, and we did a lot of media and we did a lot of other things. You know, we went on the Bert Newton show, I remember, on radio, and he said, oh, it was a breakfast show, and he said, oh, you know, if you could you keep it light? and we went to... I think we did sort of a bit of lobbying of the government around changes, and Jocelyn Scott was very big in... actually not in those earlier days, but later on, and we kind of talked with her through it and wrote articles on it. And we all went to... Women Against Rape went to the Premier's Rape Study Committee, that the Premier, I think it was a Liberal Premier at the time, and Hamer, and we went along to this sort of committee, and they got very frustrated in the bureaucracy because we always... a different person would turn up, and it was the beginning of that, you know, oh, we don't have any, you know, anybody in particular who runs the organisation. And so, yeah. Mm. And we also went to organise Reclaim the Nights and...
Mm, and what year are we talking about here, Ariel?
Oh, you're taking me back a bit. You're not ageing me.
when you were a very young spring chicken.
We won't tell anyone.
Early 80s, I think was, you know, most of it. Mm. And then Meredith, my friend who was involved in the organisation, we both got arrested for bill posting Reclaim the Night posters in Collingwood. And Meredith was very emphatic with the police. She wanted the posters back. And so then, you know, I think that really rubbed them up the wrong way. So we got charged, and she was an article clerk, I think, at the time. And so we had to be represented and she had to... Oh, she had to explain at the time, you know, when she was admitted, that she'd sort of committed this heinous offence. And subsequently when I became, admitted as a lawyer, I had to do the same thing.
Mm. And actually, Ariel, I wanted to ask you about that when you became admitted and, you went down in history for wearing pants and also had a bit of a fight to be admitted as a Ms. instead of a Miss or a Mrs., which I guess now seems to women of our generation something pretty amazingly old-fashioned. Can you tell me a bit about the sense of fight
came
that you
about had? Well, this thing came along quite naturally in a way because I went down to the Supreme Court office where you went to put in your papers to be admitted. And this old fellow there, with his fag hanging out of his mouth, he said, what are you, a miss or a missus? And I said, oh, actually, I'm Ms. And he said, no, we don't have any of that. And proceeded to sort of tell me that, that this was just outrageous and, it wouldn't be allowed. And the judge, rules the court and they wouldn't want it and all this sort of stuff. And so I sort of stepped out, kind of a bit, affronted by this, but bumped into a female barrister who I knew, and she was outraged, and so then I had Sue McGregor, who was one of the partners of the firm that I was at the time doing my articles. She represented me in the Supreme. It was a sort of Supreme Court kind of some sort of small hearing thing, and she argued that if you can be a lord or a lady or a doctor, then surely you can be a Ms. And they agreed.
How bizarre. And I actually, just doing a little bit of Googling the other night, thinking about things to talk about today, I did come across a bit of discussion about the first woman admitted in Australia, and there was actually a lot of discussion about whether the legislation needed to be amended because they were concerned that the term persons might not include women, and there was a whole lot of kind of academic debate around all of that, which is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it's really quite... I googled a little bit about the pants the other day because I was asked to talk at my son's school about it, and it was really interesting to see that, and I'll talk about the pants thing, but that, even wearing pants is still on the statute books, in France as a crime, since 1799. It's only been amended to allow for a bit of horse riding and a bit of bike riding. But, there's some, still a lot of archaic things.
Indeed.
On the book.
Yeah.
Ariel, I wonder, just from your perspective now that you're working in the law, what views you have on the role that the law plays in helping to, change societal attitudes. I mean, it's, interesting to hear you talk about how you have to go and make arguments before a court about... a title, but what role does that play, I guess, in terms of bringing the broader community along? Have you got any, insights or perspectives on that?
Oh, look, I do think that the law is very useful at, challenging, in a range of ways. It can be at the forefront. I mean, I think that even when, women going... I mean, in rape, I suppose I'd have to say that I have found that, although people have wanted to push for all sorts of reforms, I've tended to hold the view over the years that really it's the attitudes to women and the overall inequality between men and women that's really the issue, rather than that there can... that legislative change is going to bring about change. But, I have seen... various different legal reforms that actually have been quite useful and...
And just on that, Ariel, I guess, in terms of sort of the reforms and the development, what do you think about how far we've come now? Do you think the challenges that women face today are much different from the challenges that you were fighting during the 80s when you were a university activist? Or what kind of words of advice would you have for young feminists today?
Yeah, it's interesting, sorry to jump in there, but it was interesting just hearing you talking about things like rape and sexual violence and, what was going on in your time. And we know from statistics nowadays that, one in three women experience some form of physical violence in their lifetime and one in five women experience some form of sexual assault. So with some
of
these...
reporting levels and prosecution levels are still so low.
Yeah, so with some of these systemic issues, it's a really interesting question, I guess.
Yeah. I think there's still, there's a lot of sexual inequality. I mean, I find becoming an older woman now, I think that you know, older women are quite, you know, sort of invisible, and that's sort of a product of, oh, and, you know, I don't think they have as much status as, say, older, you know, middle-aged men. And I think, you know, that has something to do with inequality. And, you know, but look, I think we'd have to, if we look at something more fundamental like women's independence in terms of financial independence and their ability to, you know, commence actions, you know, pursue their rights, you know, I think that we've come a really long way. You know, I think in I look at, you know, my children, and I look at and, you know, people, all the young law students we have coming in who are in their early 20s, and I think, you know, they treat men and young men and women treat each other so differently now, and I think there's enormous change in the, we've moved a long way. I mean, as I was growing up, you know, there was still an expectation that as a woman, your status and your status in life was largely going to be about whether you were married or not, or had children or not. And I think now, you know, you can have a whole range of things, including children and marriage, if you want that. And I think that that's really nice. I think, you know, in a way, those of us who were trailblazers felt torn and felt that we couldn't have both. I knew I really wanted to have children, and I, you know, really had to kind of persevere to you know, be able to realise that, really, because, you know, I think often in relationships we were challenging lots of things, and, you know, we weren't always that popular.
Exactly.
And I think these days it's lovely that, you know, young women can sort of have a bit of both, although, look, I still see a lot of struggles that young women have.
Yeah, it's still a bit of a battle, I think. Actually, Ariel, that's a lovely little segue for us to speak a bit more with Alexia, who's another one of our guests. We might just jump on and have a couple words from our sponsor, and then have a chat with Alexia. Thanks.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio.
Welcome back to Right Now Radio. We're having a bit of a show celebrating the centenary of International Women's Day. And with me in the studio right now is Alexia Staker, who is one of the co-conveners of the Feminist Futures Conference, shortly to take place in Melbourne in May this year. Alexia, what's the conference all about?
Well, the idea for Feminist Futures actually began in April last year when I went to the F conference in Sydney, which was a conference aiming at reigniting the feminist movement in Sydney. And it was such a fantastic conference that I got together with a few other Melbourne feminists, and we decided that we had to organise a similar conference in Melbourne. And we've now been planning that for about a year. And the idea is really to provide a safe and open space for discussing strategies to build a feminist future, and also to provide networks between individuals and feminist organisations to help each other work on strategies. And we're hoping as well that some people who might not identify as feminist will be interested and come along and learn a little bit about the movement.
I guess that's a really interesting thing, the way it's presented as such a positive sort of uniting front. We've just spoken with Ariel about her background and the history of feminism, and obviously it was certainly really alive and well in generations above ours. But this generation, perhaps the term feminism, I think, has a lot of baggage and perhaps some negative associations with it. Alexia, why do you think it's still so important today?
Well, I think there's a huge range of issues that that we still need to be working on. A couple have been mentioned today. Sexual violence is still a huge issue. The pay gap is another massive issue. And I think often we fall into the trap that thinking because we've made so many gains in the past decades that all the work's been done and the battle's over. And I think it's really important that we don't fall into that trap. I think one of the problems is that the media often portrays feminists as this quite negative stereotype. I suppose it's the prototype 1970s feminist who's very angry, hairy, man-hating, and women who don't want to be associated with that image reject feminism, even though they might agree with its ideals. You often hear young women say, oh, I'm not a feminist, but, you know, I don't think women should be paid less for doing the same work as men. So we're hoping that by holding this conference, quite a large-scale conference, people will see how diverse the feminist movement is and realise that you don't have to fit a certain stereotype to be part of it.
And I guess there's also something interesting about making the idea of feminism, yeah, more broad and welcoming, but also not too broad, because you get that strange idea now that, you know, I think a lot of marketing has taken on board the use of women's empowerment and feminism and sort of, you know, being sold as anything that makes a woman feel happy is somehow feminist. You know, eating my brand of chocolate or wearing this lingerie is now women's empowerment.
That's right. I think that it's important that feminism always retains its critical edge, and that it's not just anything goes, that we should always be questioning our desires and our motivations and yeah, looking to see whether they're actually positive.
Mm. And what do you think is the role for men in all of this? Are men also invited to participate in the conference?
Absolutely. Men, I think, play a crucial role in feminism, and we can't really have a feminist future without them, so we're actively encouraging men to come along to the conference, and we've actually got men as part of our organising committee as well.
Ah, fantastic. What's, just out of interest, what's the proportion of women to men involved in it?
We've got about 6 in our core organising committee, and there we have 2 men, so,
oh,
yeah, nearly a third. Well, about, yeah, a third.
And if people want to find out more or get involved, how can they get in touch with you or find out info?
Yeah, people should feel free to email us at feministfutures@gmail.com, and further information and tickets are available on our website, which is www.mfc.org.au.
Wonderful. And I think personally I'd like to have you back, Alexia, maybe a bit closer to the date, or perhaps even around the time we might even be able to get scoop some of your guests and try and piggyback and have those them in here as well.
Fantastic.
Look, thank you very much, Alexia and Ariel, for being with us today. It's been a really great show. You've been listening to Right Now Radio, reflecting on 100 years, well, we've probably not talked about the full 100, but a bit of a history of the women's rights movement and the change in women's experiences of culture in Australia. Right Now Radio is on every Thursday night from 6 till 6:30 on 3CR 855 AM. And if you want to get in touch with us, if you've got any comments, questions, you can drop us an email. I think the email address is radio@rightnow.org.au.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Sounds good. Or you can jump on the 3CR website and have a look for us there. Thank you very much for listening. Tune in next week and stay on board, because up next is Mujeres Latin Americas.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.